Oh, I would love to, love to, love to call it love.
Love to, love to, love to call it love. That's Picture This on Radio 3. So, 13 minutes past 12, Bizzo Futurism time. Hello, Morris.
Hello, Phil. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday. Good to, because you had a day off yesterday. We allowed last week. It was allowed, wasn't
last
it?
Week,
you had
yeah.
a public holiday.
It was allowed. Yes, yes. We had the racing. Yeah. We had the horse racing.
Well, I hope you had a brilliant time.
The nation has to stop.
It does, and so does Morris.
It's a wonderful country. It's just a wonderful country where we get a day off for horse racing.
Actually, we get tons of holidays here, so we
yeah,
can't.
You do.
We can't complain. This
yeah,
end.
You, you do. You do.
So I love talking about Morris's articles. Fairly detailed, fairly long reads, morrisfuturist.com. The one that you've recently done is of interest, and I think particularly to people in this area, because it's kind of in Guangzhou, just up the road. Have we hit a eureka moment, Morris? Do explain.
I don't know if we've hit the eureka moment, but we're starting to see some things that we've talked about forever. I mean, you and I have really talked about this for a while too, and that's robots. You know, they've been fascinating to us. We first used the word 100 years ago. It was actually about 110 years ago. It's a Czech word, which means to do work, and it was written into a novel. And ever since then, we've been besotted by them. We've had science fiction. We've had movies. We've had God Bless a Betty from the Jetsons, who I loved. We've had all kinds of robots. We've had Hell, you know, H-A-L from the movie, all kinds. And it's this fascination of whether we would ever see them, what they were like. Arnold Schwarzenegger took them to the extreme and blew up the world and did terrible things with them that I every day of my life have to walk away from with other people. It's just phenomenal. And what we saw last week was and as you said, down the road from you at Xiaopeng.
Up the road.
At the science park there, we saw the emergence of robots that are getting kind of close to being realistic. And so much so, and this is, of course, media release stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, though, isn't it?
Yeah. But you need this kind of stuff. You're going to get people like, you know, me and you to talk about. And I think they claimed people were so enamored with this thing on the stage that was humanoid. It looked like a human.
Yeah.
That they didn't believe that it was a robot, and an engineer had to come up with a big carving knife and chop into this thing.
This is interesting, Morris, because this has been the big Megillah forever, hasn't it? You know,
it has.
Humanoid, bicentennial man, all that kind of stuff. Do you think it's because we want to believe?
Oh, we do, we do. We just want, you know, we want this little thing running around behind us, next to us. We're really enthralled with this. But the reason they cut it open is, I mean, yes, we didn't, well, I don't know if we did or we didn't believe it. I think it was a stage and a stunt, but doesn't matter. It got us to talk about. And the robot itself is really, really good. It doesn't matter whether it had to be cut open or not. It really does fit the bill of being something that you kind of sit there and look at it and say, well, is it real or is it somebody inside?
Yeah.
But the reason they had to cut it open, or they claim they had to, was because our friend Elon, who we try not to mention more than we have to, put a robot on stage at the beginning of this year, claimed the whole world had changed because he'd invented this robot that was just so pure and terrific and wonderful, and it turns out it had somebody inside of it.
And the icing on the cake here is that Xiaopeng's actually a motor company. It's a car company.
So absolutely. But that makes perfect sense because remember Hyundai, you know those little dog robots that we've seen forever, the dynamic ones run around, and most people have seen a clip of it somewhere in the last 10 or 15 years. Hyundai actually bought that company about 2 years ago. Because if you think about it, the mechanics of an automotive car, and especially a driverless one with everything that goes into it, is not dissimilar from a robot or anything else, which again is why Elon Musk is so into this. Because once you figured out how to stuff a whole lot of mechanics into a form and make that form kind of work on its own, which is what an autonomous car is, you can kind of do it to any size, shape or need.
You know what? This is a complete sidebar, Morris, but what fascinates me about, there were so many electric cars on the road here, different brands and stuff, but because they are all about precision and computer logic, they're very judgmental of drivers. There are warnings for everything, driver anomaly. And I wonder if people are getting ticked off with this.
Yeah, I think they are. You're absolutely right. We're not quite sure what to do, then we kind of overemphasize and do all that kind of stuff. And all that buzzing that goes on in a lot of the vehicles, I hear lots of people complaining about those things. You know, whenever you drift into a lane or something, you often hear a comment about how do you stop that thing. But this robot was actually quite fascinating. It's called Iron, I-R-O-N.
Yes.
Can't find the derivation of it. I've been looking for it ever since I read this. I don't know what it means, anything stands for anything. machine. It's just called Iron, as far as I can figure out. And what it is very much a humanoid robot. Right. It doesn't quite have... It has a face, but it doesn't have eyes and arms, you know, that kind of thing. It just looks like a very sleek form factor. But it is, and I've got a video of it, and you can Google and find other ones, but at my website you'll find a video of it as well.
Yeah.
It is really just schmick. You look at it, and it's kind of fluid.
Is that Jewish bling?
Oh, it's kind of a word that's used. Yeah, it just means that it's really well put together.
Got it.
This thing kind of looks like it's meant to be a robot.
Yes.
Sometimes they're a bit, the joints don't move very well. It just doesn't seem fluid. This one does seem to be fluid. And again, we have to take it on face value that what we see on stage is what they will be able to put out. And they claim they're not far away.
Why do we believe Boston Robotics dogs? Well, essentially, we think they're dogs.
Oh, and not just believe them.
They're
brilliant,
though, aren't they?
Maybe it's just me, but when I see that, I forget it's a robot.
Exactly.
I mean, to me, it's just a dog. It's just a dog who's running around doing incredible things, and then you kind of have this aha moment. Well, it's a robot, and we get really excited. And this is that on steroids.
Wow.
What we have here is a new category, and everything's a new category in AI because mainstream hasn't been around very long. We've said 40 years or so,
yeah.
But 3 years, three, 4 years for most things on the market. What they have is it works under an umbrella term now that's known as physical AI.
Okay.
I mean, I call it embodied intelligence, but most...
Is this the next generation Internet of Things?
Well, it goes beyond that, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the
well,
next
picked
one.
Up. So it really is the Internet of Things that we talked about. The Internet of Things was this belief that we're seeing come true now, been around for 15, 20 years, where most everything can come to life electronically. It has the ability to come to life, not to haunt you or to chase after you, but we do things now like turning on light globes without just talking to it. We can turn things on and off, you know, as we walk past them. Internet of Things means everything's connected and everything can orchestrate and work as one by a command or by a trigger. This
yeah.
physical AI takes that and ups it a level, because what it does is it does all of that, but it also has artificial intelligence baked into it. So it doesn't need the programming it once did. It's not stilted. It can... Again, you can't see, but I've got my fingers doing air quotes. It thinks for itself, and it kind of works through the pattern, which is where this robot gets its sleekness from.
Yes, I think that is actually what intrigues people. How do I put it? It's stuff that we can't explain. It's DNA level stuff. I think that's
yeah. And that's why I thought the analogy of having to cut the thing open actually really tickled me, because exactly as you just said, we just can't explain it. This thing is just moving too neatly, too well. It looks like a human. And their intent is not to actually put it into our homes. That's the company that devised this. They said that that's still a way down the track.
Yeah.
They didn't think they had it quite right for that, and they didn't think that we as humans were quite ready for these things to live alongside of us. But they saw it working in industrial, they saw it working in warehouse, in aged care, in all sorts of environments where it was really just another tool. It may be humanoid, but it was a tool, and there was a human beside it that asked it to do things, or it knew to do things on its own.
Is there something about humans going way, way back, we're sort of in awe or in wonder about the possibility of something like this? But as Morris wrote in his article here, there's a couple of great lines. He says, every civilization reaches this point, we invent something extraordinary and then flinch. Oh, one of those moments.
Yeah, and I go on to say after that, basically we go through the usual steps of suspicion, we go through awe, then we deny it, it's never going to happen, it's terrible, let's get rid of it, and then we accept it. And it's just always that same pattern. It's not always the same amount of time. I mean, it's very much like that grief thing that we talk about, stages
indeed,
of grief.
Indeed.
It's never, you know, there's never a pattern of this lasts 3 days, that's 2 weeks. But we always go through those steps. And I come back to the things that we take for granted now. The internet was the same thing. Social media was the same thing.
Hmm.
Electricity was the same thing.
Why do we always sort of get freaked
it's
out? You said here, when trains first hit 40 miles an hour,
yeah,
doctors warned our lungs would collapse. So something like
yeah,
this
yeah.
pushes forward science and discovery, because, of course, at 40 miles an hour... You know the rest.
Well, we're not used to it. And again, it's part of the human condition. We are actually hardwired to do that, physiologically hardwired, because what our body, what our brain says, look, I've never seen this before. I can kind of predict what might happen, but I'm really not sure. Let's just stay away from it. If the thing looks like a dinosaur and it's roaring and it's coming towards us, let's not take a moment to figure out if it is or it isn't. Let's just run.
The fight or flight.
And that's exactly. Yeah. And that's what we do as humans. And we don't really train ourselves to slow down and think, well, maybe I shouldn't run yet. Maybe I should just look around me and see if it is real and if it's doing, you know, whatever I think it might be. And as you said in the examples that I put in this article, we do it always, and we've done it for everything that's been put on this earth, everything. Mm. Literally, there are articles going back 110 years. I love reading them in the press, so the New York Times and other ones, which bemoans the advent of gas and electricity. And it talks about people from the pulpit, literally priests from the pulpits, telling their congregants not to install in their home because it's the work of the devil.
The devil.
Yeah, electricity will bring light to your home. It will, you know, it just don't do it.
But these great discoveries and inventions often cause a heck of a lot of trouble down the line, as we've seen, just look out the window, basically.
Yeah, that's always what it is. And this robot thing, you know, to come full circle from our discussion, we've wanted, I think many of us have ached, not as in, you know, we have to have it, but just because we've read so much sci-fi, we've seen it, we've heard it, it just seems to be part of something that we should expect to see in our lives. And this, of course, is not the only company, but this was an exhibit literally last week where there are lots of other companies working on the similar things. We mentioned our friend, Mr. Elon, and lots of others, Dynamics and all sorts of people.
So talking about Morris's latest article, morrisfuturist.com, and it's called Under the Lights in Guangzhou. So Xiaopeng's new humanoid robot walked, turned, gestured, blah, blah, blah. So are we at the stage here with these guys are just having fun and doing it because they can?
No, this will go into commercial reality. If it's not this, it will be version 2 or 3. They do intend to put it into the commercial space, as we said earlier.
Yeah.
So they want it to be used in factories. They want it to be used in aged care. They want it to be used in hospitals. Basically, where it can be a tool, where it can help people to do their jobs. They're not quite yet, they say, at the point where they want it to be in our homes. I think we still need some proof of concept of that and figure out what it will do in our homes.
The thing is, Morris, it's a machine, and with all machines, sometimes they go wrong. You're talking about, I mean, we've seen videos of Japanese waitress robots turfing food all over the floor, and it could be very, very bad in certain situations if that happens.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And I think that's what they're saying. They don't really want in the home, in a commercially owned warehouse or in a hospital setting where somebody can literally just hit the switch or stop it from doing something. There's kind of that fallback. So until we've got this thing bedded down, it's not just that also. There are really simple things like insurance. There are things like cultural norms. There are all sorts of things that have to be overcome to be able to have these things in our homes that we don't yet have. And we'll need legislation for them too, strangely enough, because we'll have to figure out who owns it, who's liable for it. All those things still have to be worked out from a governmental viewpoint. They're easier to decide in the commercial industrial space than they are in a home space.
Now, in the space of a few months, as the whole, you know, we know the AI thing is only really in the space of a few months, your theory about humand has kind of come into play, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Explain that.
So humand is a rule I've used forever and ever in my consulting, the belief that what we do as humans is really done by a number of elements, and humand is humand, A-N-D at the end. And for me, what I talk about is really breaking down any work we do, whether it's cooking something, whether it's answering a phone in a commercial environment, doesn't matter what it is, you know, you getting your deck ready to have this wonderful show, all those things. There are parts of it that are done by humans and always should be, always could be. There are parts that are done by machines like this robot. The robot is a machine. And there's parts of that task that can be done by AI. And what we need to do and what we will do as humans, even if we don't like the thought of it, is we will increasingly work through those three to figure out what's the best combination or which is the best one or two of those, human, machine or AI, to complete the task, to do what we need to do.
I want to go down another sidebar here. Some weeks ago, we talked about the new AI search function that Google is doing, and I'm just noticing more and more it's missing the point. So what are they doing about that? It really is. I mean, it's totally what we would say missing the point.
Yeah, and to me it seems like early days when we had ChatGPT. I mean, early days, all those years ago, all of three, well, it took you 3 years because we're in November. So all of 3 years ago when it launched, it's about 2 weeks off its anniversary.
Yeah.
Also, it talked a whole lot of nonsense to us, and I think that's where Google is at the moment. Not that Google wants it to, but it's trying to work through that sweet spot of it knows the end result, it knows what it wants to give us, but at the moment as it churns through the information, you know, you've asked a question, it churns through it and it gives it back to us, it's still not as good as it could be.
But they're not saying this is beta, are they? Because when you do a search these days, especially one with a question, it comes up. And, you know, we've mentioned before, if you have a brand name that's similar to something else, it really does cross its wires.
Yeah, it does, because it needs to work through it all. It's also having all sorts of issues, and not just Google. The other brands of that type of search are also having issues along the same lines. It's a matter of where they're scraping their information. Scraping means where they're getting their information from. It's a matter of how they're assembling the information, also the nuance of what you're asking it and what it thinks you're asking it. So it's not anywhere near perfect, but it is the way that we will get our search results moving forward.
A good old Google search or any search tended to yield reasonable results. Now you imagine you're a teenager or even younger doing your homework and you get one of these gibberish answers and the dominoes start falling.
Yeah, and it does concern me. I mean, as it always did, and I had the same concern with social media and the internet, is that if we isolate ourselves to only one source, you know, if we only look at one thing to get our information from and we believe that to be true, it's not necessarily so.
Mm.
You know, when I went to school in the old days when dinosaurs were around, my teachers always told me that we had to have at least three sources for our work, and they were books. They were physical books. You had to go and find different.
Really?
Yeah. And you had to go and find a minimum of three, especially for my uni work. You had to have more than that, but you couldn't just say I believed everything Phil told me because I do, and you're right always, Phil, I know that, but you know, you can't just say that.
I'm really like that AI. No, I'm not.
You got to go across multiple sources, and to your point, we're just not doing that, I think, as we used to before. That's a skill we need to push back into our children's minds, not just to take it at face value, but to get multiple sources. And the good thing about this AI is that if you ask it to, it will actually give you the multiple sources. You can say to it in the very next breath, or even when you're putting the prompt in, and give me the sources, or afterwards, tell me why, you know, where you found this. Mm. And you should ask it for that, and then go back and prove it for yourself.
Meanwhile, you've missed your homework deadline by about 3 years. Anyway, morrisfuturist.com, and if you go to his blog part, you'll find this article, The Days Robots Needed to Prove They Weren't Human. Love your work, Morris. I'll catch you next week, eh?
Have a great week.
You too, Morris Misolowski, live from Melbourne.